The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Ziyang's Last Teaching. Master Ziyang Chengru was dying, and her disciple, the nun Jin Xuan, was very anxious. Ziyang said to her, "From the beginning, there has been neither birth nor death. So what nirvana will there be?" But Jing Xuan's grief continued. Ziyang then gave a shout, and Jin Xuan went into a state of deep meditation. Ziyang called her out of it and asked, "At this moment, is there any nirvana or is there not any nirvana?" Jing Xuan said, "Your disciple from the beginning has experienced neither birth nor death, so what nirvana can there be?" Ziyang said, "This is what it is like before the dream." Jin Xuan asked, "What is it like after the dream?" Ziyang said, "When you are in a dream, you still speak the language of dreams." So this morning, the birds sing, the cars rush past on Pleasant Street. And we enter deeper and deeper into this sesshin. We all are on this adventure, heading deep into the mountains. And of course, as we travel, we encounter all kinds of terrain. Some of it may be familiar to you. I appreciated our Tanto's words this morning about the beauty of toilet bowls. So easy to forget, to think, "Oh, I've been here before." And of course, good to remember, yes, it goes in the toilet bowl, not somewhere else when we pee and poop. Our little granddaughter hasn't quite learned this, so a toilet bowl is indeed a wonderful thing for her. What could this be, this shiny white monster? But of course, we, in this newness of our experience, we can be fooled to think, "I know what this is." So we're encouraged, even if it seems familiar, to head deeper into it. And the instruction in sesshin is always the same. It is be what is here. Allow what is here to be here. Allow yourself to know what you know. Allow yourself to be bewildered, to be clear, to be sad, to be angry, to be all of the above. Wendell Berry says, "The cloud is only free to go with the wind. The rain is free only in falling." We are cloud people. We are blown about by the winds of our life. As we sit these long hours come back again and again, we discovered things we thought we had taken care of. I thought I was over that. I thought I had passed through. Of course, you have passed through and you are over what it was, but you are never over this moment. And so we keep entering in, keep practicing again and again. And the wonderful thing is that we don't have to practice for 3 days. Or even 25 minutes, we only have to practice for this moment, this breath, this step, the intensity of this feeling, or the dullness, the sleepiness, the discouragement, whatever is here. Yesterday we did the wonderful practice of Om Nam, calling and calling out and receiving. And this call and response is really at the heart of our practice. And our Eno gave us lovely instructions to truly call out together, to be one with the calling out, because this calling out is what it means to be a human being. We call out from our great need. We call out for help because all of us need help. None of us can sustain our life. We call out from our deep love, our deepest fear, our deepest joy. So we call out together. And then the lovely instruction, the second part of this. And the one I think we often forget, I certainly do, is the receiving. And receiving what arises. So often we call out and we have a particular answer in mind. So I'm calling out in this way, and the answer will be like this. Maybe occasionally we get it, but oftentimes we're so busy waiting for what we're expecting that we miss what is here. And so we practice receiving, and we sang wonderfully together, and then in the silence, all of us received the rain and the breath and the sensations and the thoughts and the emotions. And then we called out again. And I don't know about you, but I was looking forward to receiving the second response. And I was looking forward to the rain and the silence and the stillness. But after our second calling out, the bell rang twice. And we stood up. Suddenly I was receiving Brad's lovely painting instruction. Was not what I had thought I would receive, but there it was, the weight from one side to the other, reaching down, reaching up. For a while I was disappointed. I thought there was some other answer. I thought I knew what was happening. But here it was, and here it is. And looking into this wonderful story, this wonderful Dharma teacher, Ziyang, at the end of her life. She has written a number of things, including some poems. And I was looking into a poem she wrote, and it's called 10 Verses Presented on the Occasion of a Gathering in the Capital of My Disciples to See Me Off. So this is about her disciples gathering to see her off. And I imagine it's before the story we heard. It's about her retirement, her leaving. And she says, "Yesterday, my disciples spoke to me of the grief of separation as they poured out the endless sorrow that was in their hearts. Yesterday, my disciples spoke to me of the grief of separation as they poured out the endless sorrow that was in their hearts. I've ordered the flowers in the courtyard not to be too anxious, lest they startle the pearly dewdrops on the autumn blooms. Yesterday, my disciples spoke to me of the grief of separation as they poured out the endless sorrow that was in their hearts. I've ordered the flowers in the courtyard not to be too anxious, lest they startle the pearly dewdrops on the autumn blooms. This endless sorrow, I so appreciate her acknowledging and naming this endless sorrow, this brokenheartedness that arises when, I guess it can arise anytime, walking down the street, it can hit us, this in the middle of this coming and going life. And we glibly chant the five remembrances, but yet when it comes time to say goodbye, how will you be then? How will I be then? The preciousness of the people we love, the preciousness of the people we don't love, those difficult people, everything will be gone. And in response to this, sorrow arises, maybe anger and denial and bargaining and all kinds of mind states, but this is what it's like to be a human being. And at the same time, her next two lines, I've ordered the flowers in the courtyard not to be too anxious. I've ordered the grass to rest on the ground and the leaves on the trees to flutter in the wind. It's a Native American song, a brief poem that I came across decades and decades ago. And it goes, why do I go about pitying myself when all the time I am being carried on great winds across the sky? Why do I go about pitying myself when all the time I am being carried on great winds across the sky? This human life full of thoughts and worries, anxieties, difficulties, challenges, blind spots, getting stuck over and over, making endless mistakes. This life is not separate from the life of effortless functioning. Of course, the flowers in the courtyard don't need to be reassured. The bunny that I keep chasing out of the gardens away from the flowers doesn't need to be told how to be a bunny, how to move quickly, how to watch when my back is turned to come munch on the tenderest things I've just put in the ground. The bunny knows this, and you know this. You know how to function before you even think. Again, our little granddaughter, now 7 months old, does not know very much. She's rather ignorant and immature and rather self-centered, but she is totally brilliant and totally clear on her position in the world. And when she looks at you, what can you do but look back and smile? This innate clarity that we can see, maybe we know it in the plants that we take care of, or the pets we have, or the children we know, or we know it in the sound of the traffic. There is a knowing. Someone yesterday made the comment of appreciating there is a kind of knowing that is not the little knowing of the ego that packs something up in a little package and tries to hold it, but there is a knowing that guides us, that enlivens us, a knowing in our bones. Many of us have been taught to pretend we don't know. Many of us, all of us, have been told we don't know. You have to be good enough. You have to do this or do that. We try and we try and we try, but we can never satisfy that one. Because you cannot be good enough. You are already already accomplished, already Buddha, already functioning effortlessly. And what we are doing is learning how to lean back into what is already here. To slow down. This stillness we emphasize on retreat, this dynamic stillness, fully alive, fully moving, without moving. To come closer and closer, we say to close the gap between ourself and ourself. Nowhere to go, nothing to get. Nothing inside to find, nothing outside to retrieve. But already here in the fullness of it, and when we find ourselves right where we are, then walking is not walking. Sitting is not sitting. There is no line. There is no light that does not include the dark. Everything comes to us. And yet, these two worlds, the world of sorrow and the world of suchness and ease, not a small thing. Ziyang goes on in her poem. Here she's talking about approaching her death. We're all doing this, and she's consciously talking about approaching her death. And she says, I bought myself a light boat in anticipation of going south. A bright moon fills my breast. My empty heart feels foolish. I bought myself a light boat in anticipation of going south. The bright moon fills my breast. My empty heart feels foolish. Moving toward death, not as wish I could avoid it, or not lost in the sadness, though I imagine feeling this sadness that is part of it, but some anticipation. In a light boat with the moon filling her breast, she is moving forward. You and I, of course, have this light boat, this a boat of light, this boat of energy, this boat that has holes in it and will surely sink in the middle of the sea. But this possibility of entering into a fullness that does not get stuck in one and does not get stuck in two. This is the koan of the sadness of the disciple. This is the koan of the poem we read this morning about. This world of do is indeed a world of do. The poet Issa wrote this at the death of his young child. His precious young child died, I think, 4 years old, maybe five. And he's reflecting this world of do, this world of coming and going. We practice, and as we practice hard, we begin to see nothing to hold on to. There is just the beauty of things appearing and disappearing, this world of do. It is indeed, things are as they are. The flowers bloom and the flowers fall. Then he goes on to say, and yet this world of do is indeed a world of do. And yet, we are not immune. We are not separate. We say over and over again, our Zen is not a way to avoid suffering. It is not a way to fix yourself. It is Zen, as my teacher once said so kindly to me, Zen will not save you from your life. So we come to the Zendo to cry all of our tears, to touch the deep sadness, to touch joy, to touch the sweetness of love. Something just fell in the next room. Just as I was getting to the climax of the Dharma talk. Oh, well. Right? You get going on a path and you think you know. And then the universe kindly disturbs you. Right? One poet said, God disturbs us toward our destiny. Just when you think you have it, something shifts and everything shifts. And we are once again alone. We are once again lost. We are once again found. This teacher working with her disciple who is grieving, is so sad, brokenhearted. And you might imagine, as we were all doing yesterday, for you, when your teacher disappears, when your partner, when your pet, when your friend, all of us have tasted this. All of us have already been through and in this in our own way. And all of us know there is more to come. And we too, like the disciple, lost in our grief. And I've been thinking too about this shout of Ziyang. Reading a story like this, as we dream into it, we can think, oh, that was a really smart thing for the teacher to do. And we can imagine she did this as some kind of intervention. Let me make a skillful intervention. I don't recommend trying this with your partner when you get home, or with your friend, or even with your pets. But there is a shout that arises. There is a fullness of life that comes to our lips. Maybe our Om Nam, we might say, is a kind of shout where we're encouraged to call out. And so in this shout, I imagine that the teacher fully exposed herself, cried out in the midst of grief and in the midst of love and in the midst of serenity. Each gesture we make reveals the fullness of our life. You may think that you are hiding and people don't know who you really are. There is no hiding. Even hiding is a kind of self. We are all fully exposed, fully revealed. And so I imagine in this shout, in the fullness of her life, the teacher expresses her full love, her full understanding. And may it be so with each of us in each thing we do. Can we express the fullness of our love? This deep love that brings us here, that sometimes fills our breast, that sometimes seems so far away. Can we intend to give ourselves fully in each moment, not to hold back thinking, well, I'm just a beginner. I don't know. Someday maybe I'll be a big shot and sit up front and blab on and on like those guys do. But you are already a teacher. You are already living in the fullness of your life. There is no waiting. There is no other time. And this wondrous shout. And then the disciple receives the teaching. She receives the teaching and enters deeply into the presence of all things, the presence of everything in the moment, in right now. Just so struck that the teacher does not leave her there. She does not say, oh, good, you stay there in oneness, and I'll just slip out the back door. There actually is a wonderful story about a Zen teacher who didn't like so much to meet with students. And it said when a student would come to his house, he'd say, oh, please come sit down in the living room here. And then he would exit through the back door. I haven't tried that in Doksan. The second floor window is a little high. How wonderful to slip out, but Ziyang does not slip out. She called her out of oneness, called her out of tranquility, and asked her again. Is there, as you look in your own experience, what do you see? What do you know? And the student replies, in my experience, there is only this. There is not this and that. There is not life and death. There is not cessation, no beginning, no body, mind, tongue, taste. There is the fullness of just this absolute moment. And then she says from the beginning, this is what it's like before the dream. And the student says, what is it like after the dream? And the teacher says so lovingly, in the dream, we use the language of the dream. When you are in a dream, you still speak the language of dreams. Here we are, a blessing beyond measure, a singularity of the universe, each one of us alive in this dream, each one of us the center of the universe. And coming here today, this weekend, on this wondrous and terrible adventure. May we all find our way into everything, into the sadness, to the life and death that happens at each moment. and find our way into what is true, the truth, the wisdom we are looking for is not a thing and has no content other than this. So to be encouraged in all of this by these exemplars in our story, and by the exemplars sitting on your right and your left and across from you, and the exemplar who just happens to be sitting on your cushion. Thank you. Please sit comfortably, and let's make a U-shaped here in the Zendo. Looking into the matter here, all together, continuing, we'll start with Matt on the screen.
Thanks so much for your talk, David. The number of things I don't remember the exact words, but what you said your teacher said to you about, you know, Zen is not a way to fix yourself or something like that.
Right. It won't save you from your life.
Won't save you from your life. And yesterday, in Melissa's talk and in the Dharma dialogue, there was talk about intention, you know, and we bring intention to our life. Oh, I do want to fix this self. Oh, I don't want to behave that way again. And it feels inevitable that we bring that same kind of intention to this work. You know, we're in the dream. This is the language of dreams, right? And yeah, this is the way we approach it. And yet I find that, you know, this word surrender or submission, it's like, you know, I come at it the way I come at things. And, you know, it doesn't work. And then there's maybe a little, oh yeah. And something unexpected opens up, but I don't know. I just wanted to kind of offer that.
Yeah. I think you're right about we bring ourselves to the cushion and we say, you know, one mistake after the other. And of course, none of us really knows how to practice. If you think you're doing it right, you're wrong. Our practice is tinged by this self. We want something. But as you say, fortunately, it doesn't work. The wonderful thing about practice is that our practice teaches us how to practice. So don't worry about doing it wrong. Do it really wrong. And as you say, then something sometimes shifts, right? Just a little different. Yeah. Thanks, Matt. Microphone up here. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you reframing that whole, the timing of the Om Nam. Like, because after the first time, the message I was getting was, hello, rain. And then I see that light going off. And even though in my mind, I'm like, it's too early. I'm like, oh, there's a light. So time to ring a bell. So I appreciate you reframing. But the other thing is, all this talk about birth and death. A few weeks ago, our 17-year-old cat died, and he let us know like a couple of days ahead of time. He stopped pooping, and then he stopped eating and drinking, and we were able to so he was 17 and our daughter got him when she was 9, and she was really attached to him. And she and her husband drove all the way from Ohio overnight so they could be there. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this wisdom of the cat waiting till they got there. And so that they could be with him and us too. But so what am I saying? Just that I just feel like life is precious. You don't know. You don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, life is precious and you don't know. And there is also this amazing knowing that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. The cat knew, mm-hmm. Right? Beings know. Working in hospice for years, it was so clear. Something outside of time and space was going on. Why would somebody who was on death's door suddenly revive in time for a visitor from California? You know, they were in a coma. How did they know? But there's this deep, deep trust, really, in the unfolding of life and death. I think that's what you're pointing to. And the wonderful, I love David's refrain too, Om Nam. I was privileged to hear many, many versions of it all through Doksan. You know, so interesting the way I too, I instantly made up a story. My story was, wow, my zazen has gotten really great. 25 minutes now seems like 10 or 15 minutes. That was my story. But there were many stories. Oh my God, so many stories. And it's that interruption. That was an interruption, right? That was like Ziyang's shout. You know, the light, yeah. I saw the light go off. I would have done that. Maybe, who knows? But this bending to circumstances that are unpredictable, the way we think things are going to be, in my experience, they're never like that, are they? You know, maybe they're a little, they resemble the way I fantasized it was going to be. But all the things that actually happen, it's unpredictable. It's random because there's so many causes and conditions, an infinite number contributing to whatever happens. So to let ourselves be interrupted, to let ourselves really bow to surprise.
Yeah.
Madhu.
Yeah, thank you for the talk. And both the talks yesterday and today, you know, I found so beautiful and so touching. And this to me, not just about the fullness, right? But also the fullness of fullness. I feel like there's a difference when we just say fullness, but also the depth of the fullness. And when the depth and when it really, you know, meets you, I mean, it feels, the taste of it is so different. And, you know, you really feel the fullness. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Like when I came to the Sashin, I'm always like, oh, I got this, you know, I know my breath. I know what absolute truth is. It's going to be like this, la, la, la. And there is this, I'm sitting fine. I'm breathing. I it's all fine, but I have to remind myself to go back to the breath and, you know, touch it again and again. And once I'm able to, you know, do that or allow myself to do that or even allow myself to be reminded of that, I mean, even the breath, the fullness of the breath really feels different.
Yeah.
And that's what the talk and the whole koan reminded me about. It's not just about the concept of fullness, but the actual fullness.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. And what I hear especially is the freshness of this whenever we do it, and we have to do it again and again. It's not like, oh yeah, I did that last session, I'm cool, or I did it this morning, right? But this coming back again and again, and we say the inexhaustible Dharma, right? There is an aliveness that is unconstructed and unfabricated that meets us, and we taste it and we know it for sure, right? It is quite evident. And how precious to meet your life, to meet my life What could be of greater value?
And I appreciate how you said you keep coming to the breath, right? It was you got this, but you still keep coming to the breath. And for me, that ties into what Matt was saying about intention. And so for me, intention isn't a it isn't a planning. It's sort of a leaning in or leaning with, almost like I used to snowboard for many years. And so there's a lean, you're falling down the hill. You're sort of controlled falling, but you're leaning to get the catch the snow. And so the same thing here is you're leaning, sort of bending into the flow of what's happening in your life in this moment in the sendo.
Thanks, Madhu. Alan.
Here comes the microphone.
I love that image of us as drifting clouds. And you know, that touched me because that's how I try to live sometimes. And, you know, as human clouds, we sometimes want so much to stop drifting because it's like the five remembrances. You know, we're drifting towards illness, we're drifting towards death, we're drifting towards losing everyone and everything we love. And so we find ourselves in these desperate moments when we're trying to make some kind of anchor, you know, and throw it down and hope that it'll catch on some tree or jutting precipice, and it never works. But I guess my question is, you know, what do we do with that impulse? Because I don't want to deny it, but I don't want to live it out either.
Well, I think it's important to own it. You're right. You don't want to deny it, definitely. But I think you do have to live it. You really do. And this is the brave and bold thing that we talk about sometimes. We have to actually not turn away, even though we don't like it. We really don't like it. I'm working on a song that a songwriter named Warren Zevon wrote. Does anybody know Warren Zevon? Zevon? Is it Zevon? I don't know. I just read his name. So. And it's Don't Let Us Get Sick, it's called. And Don't Let Us Get Sick. Don't Let Us Get Old. Don't Let Us Get Stupid, all right? Just such a Dharma song. But let us be brave and let us be bold and let us be together tonight. That's the chorus. And I feel like the bravery and the, we don't want things. We really don't. We have to be honest. And we have to be bold and we have to let ourselves, as I loved what David was saying about everybody is exposed. You think you're hiding, but you're not. And you think you're hiding from yourself, but you can't. So when this, I don't want it comes up so strongly, you have to give your love to that. Oh, this is so beautiful, Alan. I don't want it either. And yet, let's be together in this. That's the practice. Thank you.
Yeah, please.
Warren Zevon, yes. He had a lot of great hits in the 80s. One thing that you said just touched me, that this wanting to keep it going. For me, it's the mark of being a human being. And I think it's the really only truly thing that connects me to everybody. And I can know that I'm here. I may have nothing in common with you here, you know, in your life, but that and that is what connects me to you.
Yeah, and it just reminds me that greed, anger, and ignorance are the seeds. They are the resources we have. They aren't the problems we have to fix, right? And so the seed of clinging is the entry point, the very thing that, and I think it gets harder as you get you know, more Zen years under your belt, because you know, yeah, it's really fine. You know, I'm one with everything. And to, as Melissa said, to have the courage to be exposed. I'm so scared. What's going to happen? Right. Then that is the fullness. And as we enter that, of course, that is not what we think it is. But if we hold back, we don't get to know. Yeah. Thanks so much, Al. Rich.
Yeah, thank you, David, for breaking my heart. I love these the nun stories, because we don't hear them a lot, but we're hearing them more now. And it reminded me of a talk I was listening to by Kathy Fisher, and she was talking about some of the early, really brave women nuns, you know, like the Buddha's stepmother. But anyway, one of them, I don't remember her name, but her death poem was eager for suffering, fully aware, this is the path. It's like, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I've just been carrying that around, because it's like everything. It's like what G, whatever her name is, said. It's like,
well, that, what an amazing first line, Rich. Eager for suffering.
I'm sorry. Eager to end suffering. Sorry.
Oh, that's terrible. That's terrible. Oh my God.
Oh man.
Let's raise that.
Yeah. Sucker, well, right? Forget about her. But actually, dear Rich, the way your mind heard it and gave it to us is way more important than somebody who lived 2,500 years ago. And this is what we do. We filter things through our own wisdom. You actually just did that. How beautiful. I prefer your version.
And that's funny, because I was thinking about it constantly. This is what I'm going to say. And of course, I said,
You said the truth. You said our truths.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yep. True.
Not
true.
That Theravadan, let's get rid of everything.
And both wonderful, and of both, course. Both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like David said, eager for
getting. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Now that'll be the new thing. Yeah. We'll make t-shirts. Eager for suffering. Boundless ways. And
the team. Join the team. Join the suffering team.
Great. Thanks, Rich. Brad.
Oh, yeah, mute yourself. Thank you, Rich.
I'm thinking about knowing, or wanting to talk about knowing or hear about it a little more. There's something written in one of the New Testament Gospels, if I heard it right.
We don't care. I want your version.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Speaking about Jesus, they realized he was one speaking with authority, and that kind of moved me. Rather than somebody who's just speaking out of a book or something like that. And I want to say that I can speak with some authority about my Raksu, because I lived the experience of making it. And I wouldn't have known without that. I guess the last piece of it is, my first Zen teacher, in the instructions at the end of Sesshin, he'd say, don't talk about it with people. And there's one person in particular you shouldn't talk about it with. And he kind of left that blank. But it was ourselves. And I think that's so true. Like, I had a good Sesshin, or things are coming along, or I think I understand that koan. You know, so I guess I don't mind the not knowing at all.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what Paul said yesterday, that oftentimes we divide up you know, not knowing is good and knowing is bad. But, you know, when we all walk together, we should walk fully. And when we walk fully, when the dancer is not separate from the dance, there is an authority. When the walker is not separate from the walking, there is the suchness that maybe Madhu was talking about. And there is some knowing that is not the story you tell yourself, right? You know it. And this is, we're encouraged to practice this kind of authority, authenticity, confidence, con fidelis, with fidelity, with authenticity, not power over someone else or some story. Now I understand, but just the step. Yeah. Thanks, Brad. Craig.
Thank you for the talk, David. As you often do, it seemed like you were talking directly to me. In fact, the whole session seems designed for my benefit. The story has caught me by surprise. David, you talked about things coming up that you thought were behind you. I realized that four of my friends have lost their adult children to death, and my sister-in-law. And, you know, that grief was real. I mean, it wasn't a dream. It was real, deep, hit in the gut grief. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think I was very helpful to them. You know, I sent cards and made casseroles and told them I loved them. But the practice is helpful to me. And that poem, the Aesop poem, I came back to that over and over and over again. It helped me make sense of that. You know, sure, we're going to lose people. And, oh, yes, it hurts. Mm-hmm. But that combination is just the kind of balm that I need.
I love everything you said, except for the part about I don't think I was helpful. You know, what does it mean to be helpful to someone who's facing into the death of a child? No matter how old the child is, right? The death of anybody dear to us. But there's something, you know, the cutting off of possibility that seems so off. And what can we do if you're really engaged in the practice to make a casserole? Whoa. That's everything. To send a card, to say you love them. We forget that when we're grieving. We forget we're loved. Mm. The one we love is gone. And what do we do now but to be reminded of that? So we can't help anybody. I think you're onto something really important there. But we can meet people. Just like, you know, in our suffering, what Michael was saying, the common connection is, we may have a different story, as we said yesterday, but your heart's broken, has broken. You're with someone whose heart is broken. That's the whole thing right there. And that's, I think, what we do when we're together. We're together in the Sangha. The Sangha treasure is making that vow to suffer together. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Laura.
I'm thinking a lot about this being exposed. And I think for me, at least, I do a lot of work to not, or at least to expose to particular people and not to others. And, you know, it's almost a relief to think that that's not even possible. I felt like I really had a plan to have my first little encouragement words, and it all fell apart, and I fell apart. And I felt it. There was no way that everything I thought that I would say did not happen. And everything I thought that I would feel did not happen. I thought maybe I will go around and hit people with a stick and I'll feel so strong. And I felt like I was going to just crumble in a puddle on the ground. And I guess part of that for me is, I wonder, you know, I thought, oh, now I have been exposed. Now I have exposed myself, but maybe, I guess what you're pointing to is it was already there.
Yeah, right.
Yes. You know, like I didn't, it didn't happen. So that helps my like hangover of embarrassment or being like overly seen, because it wasn't that did it. It was already there. But yeah, your thoughts I'm open to.
Yeah, I think it was so wonderful because we're like the last one to know. Right? We're running the game. I think, man, this is really working. I've really put one over. Everybody else, you know, knows and loves us anyway already. But until we let it down, until we can see that, oh, right, already exposed. How wonderful. Yeah. Well, why don't we stop there? Already exposed. Thank you.